Welcome into the Off the Rails Friday edition of the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. Leaf talk for the next hour. I'm Nick Kyprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee, Derek Brandeo, Jen Rolnick. Wherever you're watching or listening, Sportsnet 590, Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet Plus from 4 to 6. Thanks for coming along for the ride.
Yeah, text us at 590-590. We're going to read some questions on the air today. Take them. That way we don't have to plan the content.
No. No, just be honest. Just so we don't have to talk as much.
Yeah. Well, we'll do some your words, not ours for today. That would be great.
Hey, shortened week coming off 10 days for the holidays.
Yeah. Thanks for that. By the way, calendar needed it.
It did feel like we jammed in a lot in these 4 days, including, a lot of talk about Willie Nylander and his situation. But there was a lot that was happening right off the bat, including the Ryan Hartman situation that led to a very interesting conversation on our Wednesday night panel here at Sportsnet. And that story won't go away. We'll get into that a little bit more in news and notes in the next 2 hours, but it's been a lot jammed pack.
Yeah. It's been good. This is a interesting time of year where, for the Leafs, you're figuring out what they are tomorrow night. They go into San Jose, a team who is in their last 10 games. Do you happen to know their record the last 10 games, the Sharks? I hate to put you on the
better,
spot here, but
better.
No.
Worse?
Yeah.
Worse.
It's 0-10-0.
Okay. I don't know why I was under the impression that they
They got like sneaky hot there.
Yeah.
They had a moment where they were winning some games.
Yeah, that's right. Before the holidays.
Yes, they were winning some games, but they are not right now.
Outscored 43 to 15 in that stretch.
Somebody the other day just snuck by them by a goal. Didn't they lose 2-1?
Sounds
yeah,
possible.
No.
Sounds possible.
So that's why I think they're doing really well, because they're losing by respectable scores now.
So, Tomas Hertl is their all-star. So the table is set for the Leafs here. They get the Sharks in San Jose on Saturday. Then they play the Sharks at home. I believe it's Tuesday night next week.
Tuesday, yep.
Nick Robertson is not going to play again, Kipper.
Okay, so
is it crazy? Just let me say this. Is it crazy that I feel like this is way more of a test than like actual good teams, the Leafs?
No, based on what they've done against teams like this.
Because they played their best game in maybe 2 years against the Kings. In the second half of back-to-back, they squeaked by the Ducks. They played better, obviously. They killed them. They just couldn't get a goal. But going into this back-to-back, I saw Terry Koshan being like, well, if they play like they did, it's two wins. It's like, well,
can they
cruise that way?
Can they cruise one in?
Yeah.
Is the question I'm asking.
We need a night. We talked on yesterday about McDavid's last 4 or 5 games, and we are going to be joined by Oilers head coach Chris Knobloch in the second hour of the show today, by the way. But we talked about McDavid in his last 5 games. 2 of the games, he played 16 minutes.
Yeah.
They won 5-0 in San Jose, and they didn't really have to use him. And then I forget what the other game was, but he had a lot of points, and they just 16 minutes.
Yeah.
Can they do that one night?
Okay, you mentioned Nick Robertson. We'll have a conversation on Nick. But let's start, JB, our Leaf edition here, with your article today, sportsnet.ca, because it's an intriguing one for me, because there's a sense right now that Sheldon Keefe, head coach of the Leafs, has made a strategic call on accountability. And of course, it really was very well noticed and documented with David Kampf the other game.
Yeah.
But your article on sportsnet.ca is Sheldon Keefe's quest for accountability, and it comes with high stakes. Mm-hmm. So going into California, they're 17-10, I believe, or right around there. And again, the call for accountability. Mm-hmm. I mean, 17-10 is a decent record, but when you look at the start of training camp to where they were going into California, there was still a sense that something's not right with the team, or rough stretch. And it's almost as if, I don't know, Sheldon himself discovered it or someone went to Sheldon and said, not enough accountability.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get that sense that this was just, like, where did it stem? Where did it come from for a team that looks comfortably, you know, on their way to another playoff berth?
I mean, as for me, Kip, I wonder if it's not some just internal investigation into the question, why are we so bad against bad teams? What is happening that we have our best players just kind of, you know, in these games where Boston goes and just handles their business against the worst teams in the league, where are we in those games? And I think you just look at your team and say, what's happening? And it's almost like you ask so much of the star players for so much of the season, you know, no matter who you're playing, it feels like, you know, these Columbus games, they're trying to come back from behind and they end up playing 25 minutes. And you ask so much of these guys all the time. And it's like, why can't they just come out and do that and handle their business? And when they don't, why don't they get sat down? Why don't they get demoted to the third line? Why isn't there any of that? And it's because there's no accountability, no demotions or benchings or whatever, that these guys know they can go out, see how it goes. And if it doesn't go well, they're still going to get the time at the end of the game to chase, to be on the power play, to be on the man advantage when you pull the goalie. And this to me is maybe an effort to fix that, to say, we need some accountability in this team somewhere.
You want to go before I jump in?
Well, I would say that after the camp benching, the next game was the Kings game, right? Is that correct?
Correct, yeah.
I think they played harder in that game.
That was their best game of the year.
I think they haven't, not even was it their best game. It's just the manner with they played.
Yeah.
In terms of physicality.
And even the Anaheim game was a great
just
effort.
Playing hard.
Yeah.
And I guess, like, if you want to say that this mini little, you know, whatever whack worked for the first two games, and maybe it can continue. Maybe this accountability thing did work. But just for me, the timing of seeing Kampf getting benched and them having two of their better performances of the year right away, it may have actually gotten through to them.
Yeah.
Kipper?
I said in the article that they either seem to be unfazed by it or bought into it. Go ahead.
I get everything you're saying. Okay?
Yeah. You know, hey, don't spare my feelings. Just what? Go ahead.
No, I'm just now looking at Sheldon, and Sheldon's one of the longest tenured coaches in the league right now, right?
Mm-hmm. Crazy like he, as that is.
What year are we in for Sheldon?
Five?
During the pandemic season, he got, like, right before the pause, was it? Or was it the year before that?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Do we host a Leafs show?
19. I know, someone should.
2019.
Sheldon Keefe has been the coach there since here, I should say. This is much harder to find the answer. Yes, 2019, November of 2019. It's 2024 now.
Are you guys in agreement with me that since he's been the coach, that up until this week, this is the most we've ever heard since he's taken over the word accountability?
No argument there.
Yes, correct.
Okay, so, hey, Sheldon, what took you so long? And
well, I think there's a pretty clear difference,
but
this year than past years.
Listen, when you're a head coach, like, you want to set the table early when you're on a team, not in year 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's great, but like now,
yeah.
So my question to you guys is, is it better late than ever? Did you just say that moments ago?
No, it's in your head.
Okay, then that's me.
Yeah.
Better late than ever, or, oh my gosh, maybe a little too late, or what?
Yeah, like, it's an old proverb that the best time.
This is when you should have done this right away.
Yeah, it's like, what is it about planting a tree? The best time to plant a tree was yesterday. The next best time is today. You know, it's like, if you haven't done it already, it doesn't mean, like, you got to do it at some point. If you're going to dig in, you got to start.
I can't help but, you know, I don't really love to bring this up, but I can't help but look at the two different general managers, right? And we talked about this a ton in the offseason. It was a very, very popular talking point about what Sheldon Keefe would be like under a different general manager and what he would be like without Kyle Dubas around.
Okay.
Are we seeing that?
Like the tree went to him and said, Sheldon, where's the accountability?
Up until a week ago, not much difference.
But it's been a few, 2 months, 3 months. We're talking October, November, December. Let me assess what we got. We're 30 games in and go to him. Okay. I've seen enough.
That's fair.
Can we have a little bit more?
Yeah.
They're still early in the relationship.
Fair. Yeah. That is fair. Do you think Brad got to him?
I think it's a fair point. I think it's a fair point.
I totally agree with you in terms of Brad really needing a few months to absorb and see. And I don't know, did Brad in the last little while go, hey, Sheldon, we got to have a little talk here. We got to start using this word a lot more.
Yeah. You know, interesting enough, we talked yesterday on the show about Max Domi's ice time yesterday or against Anaheim.
9 minutes.
Yeah, 9 minutes. And then, you know, we were kind of going, you know, what's going on with this? I went back and watched, and, you know, we all did today, the Anaheim goal where Domi is actually his guy, and he flies the zone looking for an offensive chance. He ends up, his guy goes back in a 2-on-1, sets up Vetrano, and they score. He doesn't play a lot after that. I think he played 4 minutes, or sorry, 3 and change after that. You know, again, it seems like a push for accountability. But again, and this is what my article was on, it's one of the Team B guys.
See, I don't know if Camp is.
Domi.
I don't think Camp is part of Team B, though.
And
he's here for 4 years.
Well, and that's what I said.
Who's that?
Camp. He's not part of Team B.
No, buddy. Listen, there's only four guys.
Five. Riley's in there.
We'll throw Riley, but there's only four forwards on Team A. Okay. Everybody else
too. That is,
is Team B.
I think guys that are here for multiple seasons are sort of part of Team A.
They definitely feel more...
Like Yarncroft too.
Yeah.
He's here for multiple seasons.
Still Team B. They're still the, you know, to me, the guys that are here to help the others. You know, like they're not...
A little from column A, a little from column B.
There you go.
I get what you're saying.
So my article was
Which I loved, by the way.
Thank you. How do you find accountability for Team A?
And this is my point.
And does it matter?
When Team A hasn't been held to the fire for 4 or 5 years
in their career, can
Sheldon do it now? Or to your point in your article, are they excluded still?
Way harder to establish it once they've already gotten used to being free range chickens running around the farm. To say now you live in a pen
with you know,
this is a weird example, metaphor, whatever.
With your example was the shorthanded goal where Max is blowing the zone a big part of why he only played 9 minutes? Because if we went back in those 4 or 5 years, I think I can find you a few examples where Willie Nylander blew the zone.
That very game, I could give you examples.
He used to get benched. Used to be the only guy that
he
Keith
did.
Would.
He was eligible to be benched.
But now he's just too good.
But I think that these sort of discipline things are still in connection with what their expectations are. Like, Willie's allowed to do certain things that other people aren't because his chances of finishing any chance are so much higher
forever
than anyone else.
But forever.
But for all teams, yes.
Forever.
Historically, your best guys get a little more.
Not with Rick Tocchet, Lindy and in Jersey with Timo Meyer, and there were some big names being Huberto missed periods.
Yeah,
we've never seen that with the big boys here.
We haven't. You're right.
We've
and
seen
so this
shift.
This is where the point is: the
shifts.
One shift, one time, and it was a mess.
Could be masked with someone going to the bathroom.
But
we talked about that for a week. Imagine what would happen if it was a period.
That's probably why they don't do it.
100%.
But if you go sort the NHL.com stat category for giveaways. The top guys, historically, it's like Pavel Datsyuk. You know, like the best players in the league turn the puck over the most, and they don't get benched for giveaways. David Kampf turns it over once, and he gets benched because it's like, you don't get to try that. You don't get to try to make that play. These guys do a little bit. So it is different. There has to be some sort of difference.
We know that.
Yes.
We know that.
So the article is like, can we, I don't know, could a guy play on the third line? For the third period once if he's sucking for the night?
Listen, if you're gonna go all in, go big or go home.
Agree with that.
If you really want to send a message, then no, not the third line. You sit the rest of the period.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it doesn't dress the next game.
Right.
That's just
Berube was great on that yesterday, too. He was
he
like,
said the same thing.
He said, don't scratch the guy.
You don't need to scratch and embarrass your best players, but there's some nights where it's like, you don't have it. Mm-hmm. You don't have it, and that's okay, but just sit here and watch the rest of the game.
I got a text here, and I don't need to read the full text. It's from Tim in Hamilton. He kind of reminded me. I wouldn't say it's the first time we heard accountability, because earlier this year, before the Boston Bruins game, Sheldon did directly call out Austin Matthews. Not like hard, but said that we need more from him and said like he did a whole thing. And since then, Austin Matthews has been legitimately one of the best players on the planet. So like I think there have been other examples in this year where he's had a little bit of accountability, but I think this is the first time where we've actually seen the word pop up. Now, like he deserves credit, Keefe, for calling him out and having him turn into otherworldly Matthews right after that. Like he hasn't taken his foot off the gas since then.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just thought I'd bring it up.
But that is the tough part about how do you manage, you know, getting through to these guys that we need more, because I think it has felt at times like it doesn't matter what they do. At the end of the game, you're down one, and Keefe looks at his bench and goes, Matthews is at 70% of his best tonight. That's still better than this guy can give me. Matthews, go. Mm. Where sometimes you just have to say, yeah, he's the best goal scorer in the world, but, you know, this guy's playing unbelievable. Matthews hasn't been good tonight. You know, let's give someone else a chance who's excited, motivated for that opportunity. Yeah. I know it's worked out fine in terms of 2 points, 2 points, 2 points, but it's setting a bad precedent for the team and expectations going into games. So you have to fight for points at the end of those games.
Yeah. You also kind of... go ahead.
Will be interesting to watch now if this is a Team B change and it's Kempf and it's Domi and it's going to be Yarncroc and whoever, or if the Stars at some point...
Yeah. Who on occasion have turned the puck over?
It's happened once or twice. Looking back through the tape on the season, yes.
All right, Nick Robertson, you mentioned him earlier, will be a healthy scratch again tomorrow night on Hockey Night in Canada. I think from at least my perspective, he's done a good job in terms of coming up. No, the numbers don't support it, but he, in my opinion, has turned himself into somewhat of an asset again for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah.
Even though he will miss his second consecutive game.
I do.
I think... I think
22 still.
He is a guy that a few teams could use. I'm not saying contending teams, because now we're into the conversation of where would he fit on a contending team, and we have a Toronto Maple Leaf scenario here where he can't get into the top six. Power plays are an absolute minimal, and is he in a position to score goals? But there's got to be some teams right now that aren't competing that he can find a way to get into the lineup and see more power play time and possibly contribute 15 or 20 goals over the course of an entire season. I think that's possible.
Yeah, like a team like Columbus or Chicago, or a team that's sort of rebuilding and looking for a little help. Yeah. I could see him being an asset. You know, so you got to look at those teams if you're the Leafs, and you're like, could we get, like, you know, an older guy who's ready today? Is Boone Jenner want to get traded at some point? I don't know.
That's where I think it is for the Toronto Maple Leafs is, and I don't know on his own what he could fetch, but I want this guy back, and I'm going to give you this plus this.
And he's a plus asset.
He's a plus.
Yeah, which is nice.
Really?
Yeah. Not for you?
I don't know. I guess maybe it's just on this team. It's the fit. You guys are mentioning maybe a worse team. He gets more ice time. I just don't see it.
I don't know. You about 2 weeks ago, you told me you think he can score.
Yeah. You know, and I think he can play. Like, I think he's fast. I thought he didn't have a quick enough first step for a while. I thought, you know, he was getting run over constantly in his first year or two. He doesn't get blown up nearly as much, maybe once or twice all season. He seems to be able to gain some separation with the puck. I like his skill set, and this is just not the team for him, where he's going to get the opportunities he needs to get better.
Yeah. And we've seen McMahon and Holmberg step in that that third slash line.
Yeah, the Leafs score. And guys like that go Go finish checks and forecheck and defend.
They look better with Nick off Max Domi's line. They look bigger. They look heavier to me. The hit on
McMahon on Mintyukov.
Like, you're never getting that out of Nick Robertson.
No.
So that's more playoff type of hockey.
And I can hear people going, the Leafs only scored 2 goals a game for 7 straight games or whatever. And all I can see is Nick Robertson like turning one over or something and it ending up in your own net rather than creating one the other way. You know we can shoot it.
He does turn the puck over.
Yeah.
I don't want, because he seems like a guy that cares a lot.
He
loves
hockey.
And I don't want to kill him, but I haven't seen. He isn't. And, like, he's had moments where he's come up and it's been this hot start and he's shot it in the net and it's been exciting and like, oh, maybe this is the time it's going to stick. And then it always just goes away.
Well, I always think of players where I'm like,
fades away where you stop noticing him.
And I'm like, every time I think of him, I'm like, what line, where does he work? And it's like, well, not quite there, not quite there, not quite there, not quite there. And it's tough to find a spot. And there are guys who fit everywhere. You know, Tyler Bertuzzi, what line could you put him on? Whichever one you want. You know, he's a multifaceted guy, and Robertson's not that, so.
All right, earlier in the week, we talked about the Willie Nylander contract, I think getting to a point where it's getting a lot closer at no point, at least from my perspective, that anything's imminent or been agreed to in terms of a total package on a contract. But yet, Elliot Friedman yesterday in his 32 Thoughts had a different perspective on it, which included Willie Nylander's dad, Michael.
Hmm.
Yeah.
As a, you know, Elliot didn't really say anything in that piece aside from he is a factor here.
Yes.
And I think the implied factor
is a hindrance.
Well, I think the implied factor is that Michael was a hard negotiator when he played.
Yes.
And Elliot mentioned that Willie is a loyal son.
Yes.
And that perhaps the hard negotiating is, yes.
1 plus 2 career hindrance.
You got it. Yeah, he'd like him to make more money.
Yeah.
I'm just adding up the abacus.
For sure. And, well, first of all, Michael's an agent, right? Working with his agent, Lewis Gross.
Right.
So let's make that abundantly clear here. He's in a position where, it's just not the normal dad. He is
a player agent
representing his son. So, of course, he's going to be a factor in it. I think sometimes that part of it gets overplayed for me, at least from my perspective.
Yeah.
That the news flash is with this new generation, everybody's dad's involved. Everybody's got a say here, more so that at any point, and not, you know, this is not 25 years ago with my dad going, just still thinking I'm the richest man in the world because, you know, I'm in the NHL getting minimum wage, yeah. Right? This is a different world with dads and parents involved.
Well,
and it's just, you know, the Hughes brothers also have their dad involved with CAA.
So that's not just a way to funnel money to your family rather than give it someone else? These guys are actually involved?
I can't answer that question. Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe they're real. Maybe they go to rinks. Maybe they talk to other kids.
Well, the thing,
they're assets for the agent.
For sure.
There's no way. Like, Michael Nylander, even in his position, is not leading this charge. Lewis Gross is the main agent. He's the guy that's running this. And
Michael's input is actually as a player agent, like for Willie, like he's got some business investment here.
Michael as an agent?
Yeah.
Yes.
See, I thought it was just Lewis Gross.
No. Okay. No, this is Michael. Too.
Okay.
But Lewis Gross is leading this charge here. And this is still the kid's call when it's all said and done. And dad can just say, and Elliot made the point that he's loyal to his dad, which, okay, can you give me a father-son NHL hockey dad that you aren't loyal to? So this is about Willie getting a number ultimately that he says I'm good with.
You know, whatever that involvement is, though, like Willie is a 28-year-old man, 27-year-old man, mm-hmm. and they're offering him $11.25 million. If daddy thinks he should get another $500,000, he can't say to his dad, like, hey, I'm good. You know what? I appreciate your input. Thanks. I'm pretty content with this. It's a lot.
Or,
I'm going to go ahead with this.
Or Willie can say, this is my number and hit it. And if you don't hit it, I'm leaving.
Sure.
I'm with you, Dad.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah.
We are
on the same page.
Why
with this
do
number.
I have to leave a $250,000 or $500,000 less?
Yeah.
Why can't they just pay me what we think we're worth?
Yeah, and even in the ballpark of.
You don't know exactly the dynamic of, you know, does Willie need to be persuaded by his dad? You know, to your point, Sammy, he's 27 years old. He's been around the block now. He's had experience. He's not wet behind the ears. This is just the three of them now working together and... Here's my number. Hit it.
I mean, you guys are both parents. I'd say if either of your children are going to sign $90 million contracts, you'd probably be a little bit involved.
See, but I don't think I'd be involved saying, get 93.
Yeah. Well,
you know, I don't think I would.
Yeah, but you're not Michael Nylander,
no,
I guess. But you know what I mean? Like, I understand
I'd be involved and listening. And
I understand that he's involved.
Yeah.
But I really do hope, like, 11.25 is like, that's a pretty good contract.
JB, this is worse for them than the extra money.
It does make you, like, not business savvy.
For sure.
It makes you,
great.
Like, I don't want you representing me on my next contract.
Terrible at it.
Horrible.
Yes.
You're fired.
Not my career. You're right. You're 100% right.
So.
But is this not worse for them? What we're doing right here? Is this not worse? Like, you know, then saying, we didn't max out every nickel. Instead, people have to know, you know, the inner workings of the relationship. Give Austin Matthews credit, whatever you think about. He could have got this or he should have signed for this, whatever. Two contracts with the Leafs, just signed him and it was over. You know, like we haven't had to do, I don't know anything about
it. And the Leafs hit his number too.
Sure.
And he, not only did they hit his number, he got to dictate the term. He got to say,
yeah, but
5 years and 4 years.
It's a different
years.
Story between Matthews and Nylander.
Well, what's the difference?
But like,
is that Matthews is much better at hockey.
I have no opinions on Poppy's dad, on Papa Poppy.
Yeah. Other than the
other
fact
than
that
he likes to have a cocktail and watch his son. Like,
likes
you
to
know,
shoot guns.
You know, that's all I know. And that's great. That's great. Part of kids getting to the NHL now is your parents have to be really invested, right? Like they have to, from the beginning, have you in camps and taking you here and whatever. So parents
they're agents already.
Yeah,
they're
your
agents.
Parents are super involved more than ever. I get it.
The first time you laced up skates, they were your agent.
Yeah, I get that. I do. But it's really gotten to the point where like, okay, some point they're grown-ups here.
All right, we're going to take a quick break here. When we come
Chicago
back,
boys.
We'll get Doug McLean.
Oh, yeah, great.
Former general manager, president, author. Does it all, and he does it all for us on Fridays on Off the Rails. Doug McLean, after the break. As promised for the break, my favorite part of the week, I got to be honest with you, because I can just sit and relax and just, he can go on forever.
It's a great part
of the week.
I don't
even care what he says. I just get a break. Let's welcome him in off of the last two rounds. Can you believe like one of the best-selling authors in the history of books?
I know.
Found time to golf and break 80, I think, twice in the last week and a half, 2 weeks.
Wow, we have George R.R. Martin.
Let's welcome him in, Doug McLean. Oh, no.
Guys.
No, I for those of you that aren't watching the show on many platforms on Sportsnet, he's lined up three books in the background. One of them, of course, is Draft Day. But what are those other two books? What are they?
It's called The Golf Book, and the other is The Golfer's Excuse Handbook. And I'm going to discard the golfer's excuse handbook after the show because I don't need it anymore. So listen, I've got some great stats.
All right.
There's one in 11 million chances you could be in a plane crash in your life. One in 11 million. One in 11 trillion chances that you will break 80 at golf.
No way.
In your lifetime. And I broke it twice this week. So what's that tell you? I don't need the excuse. The golf book is one of the greatest publications, and I've been studying it, to be quite honest, because I had to work on my putting.
Can we just set the record straight?
No way.
It's one in 11 trillion 11? That you would break 80. No,
that the average golfer would. So, but here's the other problem. I was just notified that in the year 2023, Draft Day is the biggest selling sports book in Canada. And we're only out for 3 months of 23. So that's pretty exciting. I'm not going to push the book anymore because it's selling like crazy. I was just told Indigo ran out, Barnes & Noble. So I'm not going to push it anymore. But I want to go back to talking PEI real estate here in the next few shows. So anyway, other than that, let's talk hockey.
You know, I was going to start with the topic of accountability, but we don't hold you accountable. How are we going to have a conversation on it?
We need you to sit down for a week, Doug.
Right? Because Sheldon's on this big kick on accountability this past week, Mac. And, you know, as Justin wrote in Sportsnet.ca, how easy is that when you're going through your entire lineup?
Accountability. My first year in the NHL was 1987. And I remember Ron Caron, the general manager of the St. Louis Blues, talking to Jacques Martin and I about accountability. We got to make them accountable. Every time somebody gets fired, the new guy's got to make them accountable. And then when he gets fired, he wasn't making them accountable. But now everybody's accountable. Oh, like, I'm serious. Like, enough already. Just talk to your players. Tell them the way it's got to be. Forget the BS about accountability. Okay? Let's just deal with facts. Yeah, be tough on them. Be fair with them. Be hard on them. Give them the right way to play. Teach them the right way to play. But cut out all the BS on accountability. Seriously. I'm sick of the word.
All right. But if you need to send a message and sometimes it doesn't get through and you still got some of your better players cheating or breaking out of the zone before the puck comes out, you've always got that ability to bench them, do you not? I mean, have you how many stars have you benched over your career, and how easy was it or hard?
It's, well, you know, we've talked about benching players before, and I'll never forget Steve Yzerman in Detroit, and I've told you this story many times. If he missed one power play, if he doesn't go out on the first shift of the power play, or he misses one power play because you decide you're not going to play, that's like him sitting out a game. The stars don't have to be benched. They have to have a little bit of ice taken away from them when it's critical in a game, when it's a power play, when it's a key time of the game. If you're pissed off at them, take a little bit of ice time away from them. They get the same message as X player gets when he's told he's benched. So I'm not going for it. I don't buy it. But let me tell you about accountability. Why the Leafs better be accountable and why they better play the right way, which I guess is another word for accountability, is they're going to play, in all likelihood, the Florida Panthers in the first round of the playoffs. We're at the 40-game mark. Them and Florida are 2-3. I'm not sure it's going to change, guys. And if they play the Florida Panthers in the first round of the playoffs, accountability, are you kidding me? I hate to use this word because Sportsnet may bar me from going on here, but it's going to be a war on the ice. I know you got to be, you know, it has to be safe. I get all that. but this is not going to be safe to play out there. Okay? So tell Jamal
I'm looking
Myers,
forward to it
tell
already.
Him I say it's not going to be safe in this situation when they play the Florida Panthers, who, by the way, are playing great hockey right now. And it seems to be accountability. Does that come from Maurice? Or is that coming from the veterans on the team? Where does accountability really come from? Let's talk about the players making. Let's talk about Ottawa. You want to talk about accountability? What is anyway? You're the guy. You're the host. You have to bring up the topics. I'm jumping the gun.
No. So I wanted to
get the golf in because I think it was really important.
Very.
And I thought my game plateaued, but it's a great message to send to players. It doesn't matter what age you are, you can really perfect your game.
So then, my thoughts are just like, I would say the most important trait from a coach is authenticity, that they are who they are. You know, Tortorella is who he is, and so is Rick Tocchet and Craig Berube. You know what you're getting from these guys. Sheldon Keefe for 4 years has coached a certain way. Can you then say, now we're the accountability club, and change the way you have run operations and have the guys buy in?
You are what you are. And I'll tell you the one thing players know. They know when the coach isn't being real.
Yeah.
They chuckle. Like, Kippy, you talk about what it was like in the dressing room. Like you with the scarf wrapped around your neck mocking Mike Keenan. You know
yes,
what I mean?
This is true.
Listen, players,
Mike was present or no?
Right behind me.
He caught him. But that's what happens. The players know what the coach is really like. So you're right, you're right.
JB,
you're right, JB. You're right on that, 100%. And you can't. There's no changing. Like they know what DJ was in Ottawa. They know already what Jock is in Ottawa, and they know what Sheldon is. You know, and Talk has been the same. Talk hasn't changed since he was a player. So, I don't fake it, because if you're a fake, they read it so fast, it's scary. And then they have a great time when they go out for a beer after, because they're all making fun of you.
Mac, as you know, you come to our show to get entertained. Every once in a while, there's a little bit of information. Earlier this week, we talked about.
I can't get your show down.
Well, that's all right. I'll tell you all about it. Willie Nylander. We talked midweek about 8-year deal north of $11 million.
You know what? I got to tell you, I did see that, and I watched and listened to it when you broke the story, and I was really proud of you because you, as an insider, you've sort of slipped in
no,
recent years.
No, like it's retired. I'm retired.
You're like some. You're like some of the players that when their play slippage. You slipped on the insider stuff, and I was really blown away with that. You came across strong.
Thank you.
Articulate.
All right.
But what bothers me is everybody in hockey, the LeBruns and the Johnsons.
All our friends, Mac.
They forgot your name when they're writing about him. The only guy that gave you any credit was Howard Berger. So, you know what?
Mac.
I mean, you broke the biggest story of the hockey
Mac,
year.
Mac, stop it.
The biggest story of the hockey year. You broke it.
We're all in this together. So, hey.
No, we're not.
So
no,
tell
we're
me
not.
Something.
Don't ever.
Hold
don't
on.
Ever tell me that.
This summer, if I told you that Willie Nylander was going to sign minimal 88, 90, maybe more for 8 years, you would have said that's the craziest thing you ever heard of, right? Not so much now?
I definitely would have said it's the craziest thing that I would have ever heard. Yeah, for sure. The guy has, and I've talked about it for 5 years, that he's the one piece they can trade for the defenseman they're going to need to play against Florida. You know, a real defenseman, if they can even get the right guy for him. And But he has been so damn good. It's been unbelievable. He's been so dynamic off the rush. He's so dynamic at making big plays at big times in the game. He's been that good, guys, by far. Well, Matthews has been real good too. Matthews has been just terrific to watch too. And I love even Morgan Riley. I love what he's brought to the table. But look, it comes back to the same thing. Give them the $11 million. They've got no choice. Tree leaving is no choice but to pay them because they've got to keep them. The problem is, how do you build the winner? How do you build a winner when you got to go against a deep team like Florida now, or you've got to move on in the playoffs if they beat them? It's really tough, boys, to build a team, especially with the back end, the way their back end is, and with their goaltending as a youngster in goal. Wall, who's been terrific. I love him. I love what he's brought to the table, but he's a kid going against Bobrovsky in the playoffs, in all likelihood. That's a little nerve-wracking. So give him the $11 million. They got no choice. Tavares leaves eventually, but how do you build a winner? I can't figure it out.
Well, you know, even looking at the rest of this year in terms of what they would need to add, you know, are they better off trying to add some of what Florida has, some of that grit, or do you want to go the other way and not play Florida's game and try to, you know, they didn't score enough in playoffs last year? What are you looking for the Leafs to do here in the months ahead?
Well, you know, we keep hearing Tanev's name. I mean, is that going to happen? I mean, that type of guy would be a plus. What is Tanev now, a number 3-4 guy? I mean, does that help them? The price is going to be exorbitant for that. I'd rather have a guy that's a better skater maybe than Tanev. I mean, you know, I know Hanifin's there too. I really think they desperately have to add a couple of blue liners and not average, below average guys. You know, they've got to be better there. And, you know, I don't know. You say they're better off not to play Florida's game. Do you think for a minute that Florida's not going to drag them into that game? Do you not think whoever plays the Leafs in the first round is going to do everything in their power to drag them into that street fight? Sorry, Jen. They're going to drag them into a street fight. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Mac.
And that's the way they got to coach against them.
I think it's safe to say that we were all impressed with that total 60-minute game in California, in L.A. versus the Kings. If they can master that type of style of play throughout their roster, does that in itself help them against a team like Florida?
Yeah, that was a great game by the Leafs. Was that maybe one of the best 60-minute efforts you've seen from that hockey team in a long
yes.
time, where they did everything playoff style, and you know what, you're going in against LA, who have been really good at times, not as good lately, but really a good solid team, really strong down the middle with their star power there and their checking ability. I thought it was really impressive. And even the Anaheim game, I mean, they dominated. So two really good performances, you know, on the West Coast. And I mean, that's unfortunately the way they've got to play. And it's uncomfortable to play like that, guys. It's uncomfortable.
Yeah. You know, Kip, I don't know if you want to keep it on the Leafs. Do you mind if I take it somewhere
anywhere,
else here?
Buddy.
Mac, I got to get your thoughts on Ryan Hartman and Cole Perfetti and what happened there. It obviously became a hot button issue up here in Canada. Are you in Canada? Probably not, right? You're in Florida. Big deal in Canada right now, that play.
Just a minute. No, I see the ocean and there's no ice on it.
It's in PEI, isn't it?
You know what? I don't like when you've got, you know, a targeted situation. I don't like that. I don't know if that really happened or what it happens, but I know this is the National Hockey League, and I'll never forget Chuck Fletcher coming down. He was assistant GM in Florida when I was coaching. And he came down after the game. He said, we just lost 2-1 to New Jersey, Jacques Demers, New Jersey Devils. We lost 2-1 in a hard-fought battle, vicious game. And I remember, forget Chuck coming into the coaches room and saying to Lindy and I and Dwayne Sutter, wasn't any emotion or any intensity out there. And I looked at him and like, I wanted to punch him in the head. I thought, are you kidding me? It was a war down there. It was a war. It was vicious. It was a hard-fought game. When you're on the bench and you're in the fight, it's a lot different than being in the press box or watching on TV. It's a tough, tough game out there. And things happen. Things happen. And, yeah, lots of things you're not happy about, but things happen in the heat of the battle, especially as you move into the second part of the season, and then the playoffs, it goes to another level. Guys are playing for their careers. People forget making the NHL is really, really unbelievably tough. Mm-hmm. And I admire anybody that makes the NHL, but staying in the NHL is even tougher, boys.
So
it's even tougher. And you got to do what it takes to stay there.
just to follow up your last comments about how things happen, and usually it was a mystery sometimes to the viewer that they didn't know the reasons why. But now we mic guys up or we have cameras following them, and they know, and they don't like it. And as a general manager, a president, I mean, where are you on miking the guys up so they know exactly what's said or done or the reasons why? Is that selling our game or is it hurting our game?
I'll never forget. I was sitting there. I'm not sure if it was a GM's meeting or a board of governors meeting, and Gary Bettman was trying to sell us on getting the players more involved with the media, like miking them up and interviews on the bench. And he was showing us clips of the F1, the race car drivers that are driving at 300 miles an hour, and they're talking on their while they're driving. He said, Gary said, if they can do it, we can do it, can't we? And I'm thinking, oh my God, what have we got going on here? Like, seriously. I mean, I give up.
We're pretty much there now, aren't we?
Oh no, we're race car drivers, and we've got a touch of Barbie and Ken with us as well. You know, it's like crazy. Anyway.
All right. One last thought. I got to get your thoughts on Ottawa, because there was so much. New owner, a billionaire owner is going to come in. He's going to change everything. Jacques Martin's in there. He's going to change everything. No, everything kind of looks the same here in Ottawa.
Yeah, everything. It's sad. It's really hard to watch. And I really had them. And we had talked about a team taking a big step, and I really believe they would. And, you know, Nick, we spent a lot of time talking about Ottawa this summer. And you know what? I look at them and I'm looking, okay, Stutzel, not anywhere close to where he was, guys. This guy looked to me like he's going to be a superstar. You got Tkachuk not paying any attention in his own end, like playing a loose game. And, you know, I look at Norris, supposed to be a star, not playing anywhere close to where he's supposed to play. And I know their Pinto is a loss and they're down the middle. Shabbat has not been very good. Chychrun has not been very good. Their goaltending has been abysmal. There's something awry here. Is there no trust in the room? And now all of a sudden, here's where it really starts to break down. When you start reading in the paper that we're going to go after the core of this team, we have to change the core of this team. What do you think that happens to the players in the dressing room when that starts to be the number one discussion point? And they're going to have to change the core, by the way. There's going to have to be some changes.
Wow.
Anyone off the top that you would think would be expendable?
Well, Shabbat, to me, is a guy that you've got to move for me. He hasn't played a playoff game in, what, 7-8 years? He's played in the NHL.
Hold on.
Money-wise, he's got to be a guy.
Keep Chychrun, re-sign Chychrun, get rid of Shabbat is your suggestion?
I may consider moving both of them.
Ooh.
I like Chychrun as a kid. I like, but he hasn't played very well there, guys. He has not played very well. And their goaltending is a major issue. Every goaltender that leaves Ottawa becomes a good goalie in the league or a pretty good goalie in the league. But when you're in Ottawa, they're shooting balloons through you. Like, I mean, they've been terrible. They've been terrible. I'm sorry. So, there's a lot of work to do there, and you know what? I hope I happen to like Steve Staios. I like Davey Poulin, and I love Jock. But something's got to give here, boys. It's not pretty.
All right. Well, we'll let you go. Shoot another.
God, I'm glad. God, I'm glad you didn't get the team. I don't have to worry about it. You
know? And leave all of this? Are you kidding me, Mac? I would never do that. Hey, thanks for doing this. Congrats on your 79, 80. All right, pal. Off the rails with Doug McClain.
Thanks, Mac.
All right.
Thanks.
Great finish to the first hour, and we're going to come back. Head coach of the Edmonton Oilers live.
He was this close to giving us the you want me on that wall, you need me on that wall speech during that clip.
More real Kipper and Bourne after the break.